We have the cracker of the show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab some borax, and enjoy this episode of The Mysterious Traveler, entitled Death is the Visitor.
Mysterious Traveler.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back and get a good grip on your nerves. If you can. Where are we going? Why, we're going to pay a visit to the home of Albert and Louise Jordan. As nice a couple as you'd hope to meet. In a story I call... Death is the Visitor. My story begins in the Jordan home late on a hot summer night. Albert Jordan is asleep and is having a nightmare about his mother-in-law.
Pull the wool over my eyes, Albert Jordan, I'm on to your ways. Think that my only child was foolish enough to elope with you. But you made her do it, Albert. You made her.
No. She wasn't.
As long as I'm alive, she'll be protected from you. Albert, are you listening?
Leave me alone. Please.
Darling, wake up.
What is it?
You were having a nightmare, dear. You don't want to wake Mother up. She needs a good night's sleep for a trip tomorrow.
Oh yes, the trip. I wish it was tomorrow already. She was gone.
Are you sure you have everything, Mother?
Yes, Louise. Everything I need for my trip home is in this handbag. Now don't forget to ship my trunk.
I've already notified the expressman, Mother. He'll be here to pick it up this morning.
Thank you, dear.
Well, it's almost 9 o'clock, Mother. You'll miss your train.
I've never missed a train in my life. You needn't be so anxious to get rid of me, Albert.
Not really, Mother. I didn't mean...
Oh, Louise, darling, I do hate leaving you alone like this.
But, Mother, I'm not alone. I have Albert.
Well, I don't mind saying it right to his face. I don't trust him, Louise, and I never will. I'm rarely wrong about people, you know that.
Now, see here, Mother, I've had about enough. Louise and I get along perfectly well when you're not here.
See, Louise, what a temper he has. You want me to stay, darling.
Oh, really, Mother, I'm very happy with Albert.
Oh, well, then I'll go, but you'd better be good to her, Albert.
Yes, Mother, I will.
Well, goodbye. And don't forget, Louise, Mother will be back if you need her.
Yes, Mother. Bye.
Louise, if your mother pays us just one more visit, I'll leave this house for good.
Albert, what are you saying?
In the past year, she spent 8 months with us. She has her clothes here, a key to the house. Why, she's even listed in the phone book under our number. I tell you, I won't be responsible for what happens if she doesn't stay away.
I'll write to her, Albert, and try to explain. Really, I will.
Make her understand that we have our own lives to lead. You know, now that she's gone, I feel like a new man. I can breathe in my own house.
Oh, Albert, you won't forget to put the tags on Mother's trunk, will you? The expressman will be here for it soon.
No, dear. Shipping your mother's trunk to her will be one thing I certainly won't forget. Let me see. This is Hortense Duck. 925 River Road, Ferndale, Pennsylvania.
That won't be necessary, Albert. My trunk can remain here.
Mother, but you went to catch your train.
I know I did, but I changed my mind about going. I won't leave my little girl alone. Why are you looking so startled, Albert? Are you hiding something from me?
No. No, of course not.
Where's Louise?
She went downtown an hour ago.
She should be home soon. I'm sure at least she'll be glad to see me. Oh, you haven't locked my trunk yet. That's good.
So you've come back. Again.
You've always wanted to get rid of me, Albert. Keep me away from my only child, but I refuse to give her up. Yes, I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good. Frankly, I don't trust you.
You don't trust me?
No. I don't even know your background. For all I know, you may have criminal tendencies.
There's a certain amount of the criminal in all of us. Most people can control their worst instincts. And some can't.
Exactly. And I'm here to see to it that no one harms Louise.
But, Mother, who's going to look out for you?
Albert, why are you looking so queerly at me? Are you sick?
Yes, Mother, I'm sick. Sick of the sight of you.
Albert, stop looking at me that way. Why, you seem like a different person.
I am, Mother. You've made me different. And now you must take the consequences.
Albert, stay away from me. Don't you dare come near me.
So you would keep coming back, Mother. Well, you came back just once too often.
No, no, Albert. Don't touch me. Albert,
you should have taken that train, Mother. But at least now, I know you won't be coming back ever again. I didn't want to kill you. You made me. Oh, but now I've got to get rid of you or they'll catch me. The trunk. Yes, it's large enough. Even in death, you're a problem, Mother. But you won't be for long. There. Now I'll have to get rid of the trunk. Somehow. I'll think of a way.
Albert, are you home?
Louise, trunk. I've got to close it.
Is that you, Albert?
Yes, dear. Yes.
Oh, I see. You're locking the trunk.
Yes, I was just getting it ready for the expressman.
He should be here by now. Albert, is anything wrong?
Anything wrong? What do you mean, Louise?
I don't know. Your face is so flushed.
Oh, it's just a little warm in here, that's all.
Oh, we forgot to pack Mother's robe. Look, you'll have to open the trunk again, Albert.
No, I mean, the trunk's full already. You wouldn't be able to get anything else into it.
Why, nonsense. When Mother and I packed it, it was only half full. Oh, please open it.
But it's locked, and we haven't got the key.
Oh, yes, that's right. Mother has them. Well, we'll just have to mail the robe to her. Oh, I'll answer the door. It must be the expressman. Make sure the tags are on it, dear.
The tags. Oh, she can't go to her home. Oh, if I only had time to think. Wait, yes, that's the only thing to do.
Come this way, please. You'll find the trunk in this room. Here it is. Are you finished, Albert?
Yes, it's all ready to go.
Okay. Well, I'll make a racket of it. Now, let me see. It's being shipped to...
Perhaps you'd better load it on the truck first.
It's easier this way, mister. You're shipping it to Mr. William Smith, 345 Wood Street, Las Vegas.
Well, that isn't the right address.
Then, what is it on this shipping tag, lady?
Oh, that must be one of my customers. I must have been thinking of someone else when I wrote it out.
Yeah, but what's the right address?
Oh, it's Mrs. Hortense Murdoch, 125 River Road, Ferrydale, Pennsylvania. That's right, isn't it, dear?
Yes.
Okay, I know your name and address. I'll put the right tags on later. That's mighty heavy.
Oh, please be careful with it.
Don't worry, lady. I'll get there. Take it down.
Albert, did you get the mail just now?
Yes, dear.
Is there a letter from Mother yet?
No, just a few bills.
I'm really worried. It's a week now and no word from her.
You mustn't worry, Louise. I'm sure she's all right.
Why, Albert, you're even worried yourself about her. You look so upset.
Oh, I'll answer.
I'll come with you. Maybe it's a special delivery for Mother.
Yes?
Hey, good morning. I got a trunk here for you folks.
What? It's Mother's trunk.
Yes.
Always wanted to get rid of me, Albert. But I've come back, Albert, and I'm staying for good.
Bring it in, won't you, please?
Okay, baby. There you are.
But I don't understand. Why should Mother send her trunk back to us?
Would you mind signing for it, Mr. Jordan?
What? Oh, yes. Here you are.
Thanks.
Bye.
Albert, I can't understand why Mother shipped her trunk back to us and without even writing a word about it. Can you figure it out?
Oh, no, I can't.
Well, I'm going to put an end to this guessing.
Louise, what are you going to do?
I'm calling Mother. Hello, operator. I want to put through a call to Ferrydale, Pennsylvania. The number is 223.
Why bother, Louise? I'm sure there's a letter on the way.
Oh, I've waited long enough for one. I'm sure there's something wrong. Oh, hello? Hello, Sarah. This is Louise calling. Is my mother there? What? Are you sure? Oh, that's why you shipped the trunk back. No, thank you, Sarah. Albert, Sarah says that Mother never arrived home. She sent a postcard saying not to expect her just yet.
Was Sarah the one who shipped the trunk back?
Yes. She thought that Mother had decided to stay with us longer and would need her clothes. But, Albert, where can she be?
Now, Louise, I'm sure she's all right.
All right, she's been missing a week. How could she be?
Well, perhaps she's staying with friends.
You know Mother hasn't any friends. We've got to do something. Albert, I'm going to call the police.
The police investigated, but they had no clues, so they didn't learn anything. And George got rid of the embarrassing trunk just as fast as he could. Telling Louise he was going to put it into storage, he took it to a trucking company to ship it as far away as it could go. It was the only thing he could think of to do.
All right, I got it straight, I guess, now. Mr. Richard Jones, 65 Ocean Avenue, Los Angeles. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. He's my brother.
Yeah, and your name is,
Martin Jones.
Huh?
1635 Sherwood Road, Riverdale, New York.
Jones, Sherwood Road, Riverdale. All right, Mr. Jones, now let's see. That'll be $18.
Oh, well, here's 20. Keep the change.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Jones. Here's your receipt.
It'll go out right away.
There's a truck leaving tonight. Don't you worry. This trunk will get to Los Angeles all right.
That's fine. It'll be quite a load off my mind when it's gone.
A week passed, 2 weeks, three, and poor Albert was breathing more easily again. Until one morning when something most unexpected happened.
Louise? Louise, darling?
Yes, Albert?
Oh, darling, I have a present for you. Some flowers. Just saw them and thought you'd like them.
Thank you, Albert. You're very thoughtful.
Louise, your mother's been missing more than a month now. You can't go on like this. You'll have a breakdown.
Oh, Albert, where can she be? Why can't the police find her?
Well, darling, if she hasn't been found in 5 weeks... Oh, excuse me, dear. I'll answer.
Maybe it's news of Mother, Albert.
Good evening. I got a trunk here. I think it belongs to you.
A trunk?
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You always wanted to get rid of me, Albert. But I've come back, Albert. I've come back.
Do you recognize it? It is yours, isn't it?
Oh, no.
Huh? Well, ain't you the fella that shipped this trunk about a month ago? Didn't you give me a $2 tip?
I'm afraid you have me confused with someone else. Don't you know where the trunk goes?
Well, no. You see, it's come all the way back from California. It seems there wasn't no such address where this was shipped to.
Surely it had a return address.
Yeah, but the trunk got wet. The return address kind of washed off, so it came back to the office where it was shipped from.
Oh, but what makes you think it belongs here?
Well, you see, I kind of did a little detective work. The initials stamped on the trunk are HGM. Well, I looked it up in the phone book, and the only person in town with those initials lived here.
Well, I'm sorry, but it certainly isn't my trunk.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to trouble you. I'd have sworn you was the guy that gave me that $2 tip.
Where will you take the trunk now?
Oh, it'll be put in the unclaimed baggage, and then in a few months it'll be auctioned off.
Auctioned off?
Yeah. You'd be surprised what you sometimes find in them, just like a grab bag game. Well, sorry to trouble you.
Oh, wait a minute.
Huh?
What did you say those initials were?
HGM.
HGM. What? They're my mother-in-law's initials. Her name is Hortense G. Murdoch.
Well, sure, that was the only name in the book with those initials. That's why I came here.
Well, that was a very clever piece of detective work.
Yes, of course it's her trunk. I don't know why I didn't recognize it.
Well, you know, trunks, they kind of look alike.
Yes, that's right.
Well, bring it in.
Trunks are funny things, aren't they? You have something valuable in one, just as likely as not it'll get lost. But put something you don't want in it, like a mother-in-law, it'll come back every time. You can hardly blame Albert for being upset, especially since Louise wanted to open the trunk to look for possible clues. But Albert managed to get Louise out of the house, then put the trunk onto the trunk rack of his car and started out. Several hours later, he was at the receiving platform of an all-night storage warehouse in New York.
Yes, mister? Can I help you?
Pardon me, but you store trunks here, don't you?
Yeah, sure. We store anything in here. You want to store that trunk you got there?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay, I'll make out a ticket. Now, what's your name?
Williams. John Williams.
The address?
313 Maple Street.
Yeah, but what city, mister? What city?
Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore. Okay. Charge is $3 a month. How long you want to pay for?
Oh, quite a while. I'll be leaving the country and...
Well, what is it? Anything wrong, mister?
Oh, dear. I only seem to have $6 with me.
Well, that'll pay for 2 months. Then we'll send you a bill.
No, that won't be necessary. I'll send you a money order in a few days. I may be out of the country for several years.
Okay. Leave the trunk there. I'll take care of it. And here's your receipt. Just put the number of it in your letter when you send the money.
I will. I won't forget. Good night.
Good night. Hey, Mr. Williams. Mr. He's gone. There's a receipt on the platform where he dropped it. The nervous type. Oh, well, I suppose I can forward it to him from Baltimore.
When Albert found he'd lost his receipt for the trunk, he was badly upset at first. That meant he couldn't send any money for future storage charges. But after all, there was no identification inside it, and he'd rubbed Mother's initials off the outside this time. So how could anyone trace it back to him? Especially since they'd be looking for him in Baltimore. So in a few weeks, Albert was himself again. Except for a nightmare once in a while.
After all, what do I know about you, Albert? You may have criminal tendencies. I'm going to protect my daughter from you. Yes, I've come back and you're not going to get rid of me. Do you hear me, Albert? I've come back to stay.
Oh, no. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I can't.
Albert. No. Albert, wake up.
What is it, Louise?
You were moaning in your sleep, dear. You must have been having a nightmare.
Oh, yes, I was. But it's not important. Just that midnight snack I had. Go back to sleep, darling.
But as the months passed, so did the nightmares. And finally, Albert was his old, cheerful self again.
Good evening, dear. How are you?
I'm all right, Albert.
Fine. Say, I bumped into George Horton and his wife while on the way home, and they asked us to come to the charity bazaar tonight.
That was very nice of them, Albert.
Well, why don't we go? There'll be an auction, a raffle, supper, dancing. It'll do you good.
I know, but somehow I don't feel like meeting people.
But you can't go on this way, Louise, cutting yourself off from the world.
I've been unfair to you, haven't I, Albert? Keeping you home night after night all these months.
Oh, why, darling, you know I've been perfectly happy. It's been so nice. Just the two of us.
You've been perfectly wonderful, Albert. I'm afraid I've been acting very selfishly. All right, I'll go to that charity affair tonight.
Now, what have I bid for this beautiful antique lamp? Do I hear, darling? Do I hear a dollar?
I'll get a dollar.
Ah, there we have a lady with a real sense of beauty. Now, do I hear $2? Do I hear $2?
Well, good evening, George.
Well, hello, Albert. Hello, Louise.
Hello, George.
Gee, I'm sure glad you two came. Missed you both a lot these past months.
Well, I hope you'll be seeing more of us. And we've got quite a crowd here tonight.
Oh, yeah. We hope to raise quite a bit of money. Say, that auctioneer's a genius. Come on, let's get a little closer.
All right.
That gentleman over there, the one with the superb eye for beauty, bid $5 for this lamp. Do I hear $5.50? Your last chance, ladies and gentlemen, going at $5 once, going twice, sold to the gentleman in the tweed suit, and very fortunate he is.
That lamp couldn't have cost more than $3 when it was new. Well, now we come to the raffle.
The raffle?
Yeah, the raffle for a mystery prize donated by yours truly, George Horton.
Well, oh.
Better let me sell you a few tickets, Albert. They're only 50 cents each.
No, thanks, George. We just came to be sociable.
Better take a chance. No telling what you might win.
Now, next, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the feature of the evening. A raffle for a mystery prize, which I have hidden here beneath this canvas cover. Now, I'm going to lift this cover and show you a locked trunk. Now, take a good look at it.
Trunk? Oh, no. It can't be. She's come back again.
Yes, Albert, I've come back. And I'm going to stay for good this time.
Oh, no.
Now, this is no ordinary trunk, ladies and gentlemen. It was donated by a gentleman who bought it for storage charges. Now, who knows what it contains? Perhaps the crown jewels of old Russia. Or better still, a case of scum. Now, take a good look at it and try to guess.
Albert, you're so pale. Is there anything wrong?
No, of course not. George, where did you get this trunk?
Oh, that big storage place in New York. You know, on the east side. Somebody did keep up the storage charges on it, and all the notifications they mailed came back,
yes.
So...
Yes, I see.
Now that you've seen all the prizes, and particularly seen this prize, ladies and gentlemen, I know you're going to want to buy not one, not two, but half a dozen chances each. What can be in it? Guessing is half the fun. Well, now we're all going to adjourn for supper, and immediately after supper, the big drawing will be held. So buy your chances now and win yourself a trunk full of surprise and pleasure.
Well, Albert, changed your mind about buying a chance or two?
Yes, George, yes, I have. I'll take all you've got.
Albert, I don't understand you. You've bought every chance that was left on that trunk.
Louise, I know what I'm doing.
What on earth do you want with an old trunk? Looks a lot like Mother's trunk, doesn't it?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
But of course it does, Albert. It's the same make and color. It has the same dent there. But it couldn't be.
Of course not. The idea is absurd.
Darling, you're acting so strangely. You didn't eat any supper, and now...
For heaven's sake, Louise, will you stop nagging me?
I'm sorry, Albert.
Hello. Feeling pretty sure you're going to win it with all those tickets, huh, Albert?
I hope so.
I knew the mystery if it would get you. Say, I've even got a ticket on it myself. So you'll have some competition.
Oh, I'll win it. I've got to.
Well, I did my best. I picked out the heaviest trunk the place had for sale. So I don't want the winner to blame me if he doesn't like what he finds.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're ready for the feature of the evening, the drawing for the locked mystery trunk. Now, my assistant has put all the ticket stubs in the wire for you. And so I spin it thus. Round and round it goes, and where it stops, nobody knows. Now, the stubs are thoroughly mixed. And I stop the wheel so that this lovely young lady may reach in and withdraw the number of the lucky winner. Now, will you open your eyes, please, and read the number that you have drawn?
Number 38
is the winner. Is the holder of number 38 here, please?
Yes, I have it. I've won.
Well, good for you, Albert.
Congratulations, sir. May I have your ticket, please, so that I may compare it with the stub that the young lady drew?
Yes, of course. Here it is.
Thank you. Now, I place the ticket and the stub together. And we...
What is...
I'm very sorry. I'm afraid an error has occurred.
An error? What do you mean?
The young lady misread the winning number. It is number 33, not 38.
No. Oh, you're lying. I won. The trunk's mine.
Now, I'm sorry, but mistakes will happen. Ladies and gentlemen, I must make a correction. The winning number is 33.
He's the holder of number 33 present.
Yes. Well, that's my number. Well, hard luck, Albert. But I guess you don't win after all.
Now, may I have your ticket, please?
Sure. Here.
Thank you very much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the lucky winner, purely by chance, is the gentleman who donated the prize, Mr. George Barton. And congratulations to you, sir. And I hope you'll open the trunk now and let the rest of us know what we missed out on.
I certainly will.
No, he can't open it. You haven't got the key.
No, but I have a bunch here that I borrowed from a locksmith, and one of them's bound to work.
You mustn't open it. George, I'll buy that trunk from you.
But I don't want to sell. I want to know what's in the trunk. That's where the fun comes in.
I'll give you $100. You can't refuse.
$100? Well, if you want it that bad, all right.
I'll give you my check tomorrow.
Yeah, but there's one condition.
Condition?
Yep. That you open the trunk here so we can all see what's in it.
Oh, no, I won't do it.
Well, then the deal's off. Sorry, Albert, but curiosity has the better of it.
Oh, come on. George, please listen to me.
Sorry, Albert, sorry. Just a minute, everybody. As soon as I find one of these keys, it's better.
Do I come back, Albert? And I have. Oh. You should have known I would.
Oh, no.
Darling, you're not well. Let's go home.
No, it's no use. It's just no use.
What on earth do you mean?
You'll never be rid of me, Albert. Never. I've come back to stay this time.
I think I've got it. Yeah, this key seems to be turning.
No, wait.
What is it?
You mustn't open it.
Oh, Albert, fun, but after all...
I had something to tell you. She's beaten me. I can't keep it hidden any longer.
That's right, Albert. Tell them. It's the only way you can ever be rid of me. Go on, tell them.
Well, Albert...
I did it. I killed her.
Did what? Killed who?
Albert, what are you talking about?
I killed Louise's mother. Her body is in that trunk.
Oh, no.
Albert, that's a very poor joke.
Oh, it's no joke. I thought I could get rid of her, but I can't. She keeps coming back and coming back and coming back, and I can't stand it any longer. Go on, open the trunk now. You'll see I'm telling the truth. Go on, open it.
All right, we will. Please stand back, everybody. Come on, stand back, all of you.
Yes,
how can you help me, will you?
Yes, sure, Mr. Wharton. I'll undo this catch now. There. All right, now lift us.
Albert, this trunk. Why, there's nothing in it but old books.
This is the mysterious traveler again. Poor Albert. He let himself be fooled by the wrong trunk. Maybe it was his guilty conscience. What happened to him? Why, he's getting the best of attention these days in a small but comfortable room with bars over the windows. The only trouble is the bars won't keep his mother-in-law out. She comes in every night to talk to him. So if you're ever tempted to... Oh, you're getting off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this time.
You've just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. Listen next week over most of these mutual stations to a tale titled
Murder is No Accident.
Another tale of The Mysterious Traveler. The Mysterious Traveler is presented by the Mutual Network from our New York studios. Russ Dunbar speaking. Stay tuned to this station for another exciting crime drama. True Detective Mysteries, which immediately follows Station Identification. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That Carey heart is a sleepy baby fish. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of X-1, entitled Appointment in Tomorrow.
countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, Appointment in Tomorrow by Fritz Leiber. The first angry rays of the sun, which surprisingly enough still rose in the east at 24-hour intervals, pierced the lacy tops of Atlantic combers and touched thousands of sleeping Americans with unconscious fear because of the unpleasant similarity to the ray from World War III's thermonuclear weapons. This was America approaching the end of the 20th century, America of the mask fad for women and the neo-Cretan dress styles, America of your local radiation hospital, of the endless war and the loyalty detector. In his bedroom, in the Thinkers Foundation, George Helmut slept.
Your calculus to the nucleus, adding a quantum equal to the resultant of G sub 1 prime. Repeating, the quantum.
His educational sandman purred learnedly in his ear, droning tensor calculus through the night, filling the hours that used to hold man's formless fears and floating anxieties with the rigid form and anchored shapes of mathematics. Precisely at 8, the sidereal alarm went off.
My head. Oh, shower. 96.8, commence.
Under the soothing spray of the body temperature robo-shower, Helmut took a deep breath and cast his mind to the limits of the world and his knowledge. It was a somewhat shadowy vision, but he noted with impartial approval, definitely less shadowy than yesterday morning.
Off. Dry blast. Commence.
Employing a rapid mental scanning technique, he cleared his memory chains of false associations, including those acquired while asleep. He felt the snap of clearing non-thalamic reasoning returning as the brain surged into clear, sharp control.
Off. Clothing. Color key 705.
He stepped into his clothing, the severe tunic, tights, and socksons of the modern businessman. He smiled. The next big move had come to him in his sleep, as many of his best decisions did, because he utilized the time-saving technique of somno-thought, which could function at the same time as somno-learning.
Attention, robo-locator. Category, rocket physicist. Classification, genius level. Time limit for search, 20 minutes. Commence. Take dictation. Dear fellow scientist, a project is contemplated that will have a crucial bearing on man's future in deep space. Ample non-military government funds are available. There was a time when professional men scoffed at the Thinkers Foundation. Then there was a time when the thinkers perforce neglected the professional men. Now both times are past. I would like to consult you this afternoon, 3 o'clock sharp, Thinkers Foundation, signed George Helmut. End of dictation.
The president is waiting to see Maisie, sir. He has the general staff with him.
Martian peace to him. Tell him I'll be down in a few minutes.
Huge as a primitive nuclear reactor, Maisie, the great electronic brain, loomed over the knot of hushed-voiced men. Its front was an orderly expanse of controls, indicators, telltales, and terminals. The upper ones reached by a chair on a boom. This was the machine with a million times as many synapses as the human brain. The machine that remembered by cutting delicate little notches on the rims of molecules. This was the machine that timid cyberneticists and stuffy professional scientists had said could not be built. Yet this was the machine that the thinkers, with characteristic Yankee push, had built and named, with characteristic irreverence, Maisie.
Have you the question for the day, Mr. President?
Here, Mr. Helmut.
I see.
The question on the Pakistan crisis is a little touchy. I don't know.
If there is enough data to answer it, Maisie will do so.
Well, of course, I didn't mean to.
If you will excuse me, gentlemen, I will code the questions for Maisie. Oh, section 5, question 4. Whom would that come from?
Number 4. Physics. Oppoli and his research team.
I see. Thank you, Mr. President. While I'm coding the tape, there will be time to watch the takeoff of the Mars rocket.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, I've often wanted to go to New Mexico. As a matter of fact, I've always wanted to go right through to Mars.
Mr. President.
My chief of staff thinks the project should be under the Army instead of the Thinkers Foundation.
Mr. President, this is the way Maisie designed the project.
Oh, I know. That's what I told him. Still, I wish you people could bring back a few of those wise little devils from Mars. It would be a good thing for the party, the country.
It's quite unthinkable. The telepathic abilities of the Martians make them extremely sensitive. The conflicts of ordinary Earth minds would impinge on them psychotically. Only the thinkers can contact them because of the clear training and errorless memory chains. Perhaps someday, in the future... Ah, there goes the rocket.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I am ready to submit the question tapes to Maisie. Stand back, gentlemen.
Oh, well, sorry.
And now... All right, gentlemen. Maisie is thinking.
The question tape, like a New Year's streamer tossed out of a high window into the night, sped on its dark way along spinning rollers. Curling with an intricate aimlessness, it tantalized the silver fingers of 1,000 relays, saucily evaded the glances of 10,000 electric eyes, impishly darted down a narrow black alleyway of memory banks, and, reaching the center of the cube, suddenly emerged into a small room where a sweating fat man in shorts sat drinking beer.
Here it comes. Get off my lap, honey. I've got work to do.
Can it wait?
I said get.
Ow! You didn't have to do that.
When Maisie thinks, she thinks. Open up another beer.
Look, I'm not a robo-barmaid.
Honey... Do what you're told, or I'll ship you out where they'll work some of the upholstery off that frame, slopping radioactive mud.
You don't have to get nasty, Jan. Here's your beer.
That's better.
It makes you fat.
I like to be fat. It makes our relationship more poignant. Pass me the questions and get over to your keyboard.
You're a greasy pig.
But such an attractive pig. Start taping. Why, that dirty...
What's the matter?
One of the questions. Does Maisie stand for Maelzel?
For what?
Maelzel.
Does it?
Look, you just keep sitting on your brains and let me do the thinking. Tape. Maisie does not stand for Maelzel. Maisie stands for amazing, humorously given the form of a girl's name.
Who is Maelzel?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Huh?
It's a story. Maelzel's chess player. About an automaton that was supposed to play chess. Poe proved it had a man inside it.
Oh, and they want to know if Maisie... They're wrong. Maisie doesn't have a man inside it. Just a lump of conceited lard. You could hit me with that. Look at my dress.
Get me another glass of beer. That must have come from the physics section of the Research Institute. Oppoli and that ape Farquhar. We'll look into that. All right, start taping. Question 1. The midterm election vidicast should be spaced as follows.
Morton Upperly's living room was quite behind the times. Instead of reading tapes, there were books. And instead of a 4x6 TV screen, there was a Picasso, still faintly radioactive from being smuggled out of the Manhattan crater. Two physicists faced each other across the table, old Mr. Upperly and young Mr. Farquhar.
About that male Zell question, Willard. Why do you keep teasing the zoo animals?
Because the thinkers are charlatans who must be exposed. We know their Maisie is no more than a tea leaf reading fake. We've traced their Mars rockets, and we know they go into orbit 500 miles above Earth and stay there until it's time to come down with the latest miraculous Martian mental science.
But we've already exposed the thinkers very thoroughly. You know the good it did. Ah, Willard, the age we live in wants magicians. A scientist tells people the truth. When times are good, when the truth offers no threat, people don't mind. But when times are very, very bad, well, a magician tells people what they wish were true. That perpetual motion works, that colored lights can cure cancer, that a psychosis is no worse than a bad cold, and that they live forever. In good times, magicians are laughed at. They're the luxury of a spoiled, wealthy few. But in bad times, people sell their souls for magic cures and buy perpetual motion machines to power their war rockets.
Are we supposed to beg off from a job because it's difficult and dangerous?
In my day, Willard, I was one of the frightened men. Later, I was one of the angry men, and then one of the minds of despair. And now I'm convinced that all of my reactions were futile.
Exactly. You reacted. You didn't act. If you men who discovered atomic energy had only formed a secret league, if you'd only had the guts and foresight to use your tremendous bargaining power to...
Willard, we scientists weren't the stuff of which cloak and dagger men are made. Can you imagine Oppenheimer wearing a mask or old Einstein sneaking into the White House with a bomb in his briefcase? That's not the way power is seized. New ideas aren't useful to men bargaining for power. Only established facts or lies are.
What do you want to do? Surrender the world to charlatans without a struggle? The thinkers are vulnerable. Their power is based on a series of lies.
All power is. The greater the lie, the greater the power.
What's it based on? A few lucky guesses, some faith healing, some science hocus pocus.
The power of the thinkers isn't based on what they've got, but on what the world hasn't got. Peace. Honor, a good conscience.
They've sent for me.
Who? Jan Tregaron?
No, George Helmut. I got the radiogram an hour ago. They know they'll have to produce a real nuclear rocket pretty soon, and they'll need our help.
I'm afraid, Willard.
You think it might be a trap? After the Malzell question, you think they might want to shut me up?
I'm not afraid for your life. I'm worried about other things they might do to you.
They'd better be worried about the things I'm going to do to them.
March and peace to you, Willard Farquhar. You have entered the Thinkers Foundation. Please remain on the slideway.
I want to see George Helmut.
May we take your hat and coat?
What the...
Do not be alarmed. Invisible radiations are slaughtering all the germs in your body, while more delicate emanations are producing a benign rearrangement of your emotions.
Claptrap. I can recognize a 14-cycle sonic note when I hear one. Where's Helmut?
This way, please.
Helmut, cut out all this swami stuff. Where are you?
I'm afraid Mr. Helmut won't be able to meet you, Mr. Farquhar. I'm Jan Tregaron. Perhaps you can have your conversation with me.
George Helmut waited in a conference room with 24 empty chairs. He had prepared by 2 hours' rest with the somno teacher on full volume for this conference, having strengthened his mind by hard years of somno learning, memory straightening, and sensory training. He had assured himself of the executive power to control the technicians and direct their specialized abilities. Together, they would have built the true Mars rocket. But, unfortunately, No one came.
Where are they? Report.
No word from the door, Master.
They can't all be late. Did you check?
The calls have been put through.
What response?
Dr. Burnside reports he received the second message just in time.
What second message?
The message calling off the meeting.
Did he read the text of the second message back?
Shall I play it back?
Never mind. How was it signed? The signature.
Signature, Mr. Jan Tregaron.
George Helmut dejectedly examined his organizational charts, and then tapping his stylo on the pad, he extended his mental aura, cleared his memory chains of error, accelerated his cerebral processes by the Haber-Gerson process he'd practiced for so many years. Slowly, he could feel the tight, heart-squeezing disappointment ebb. He was in control again. Tregaron. He was the one to blame. Tregaron, who was so used to working by deception that he must be shown the light.
Well, Willard, how was your adventure among the magicians?
Well, they didn't hurt me.
You're sure? And are you as determined as ever to smash and expose the thinkers?
Of course. Only from now on I won't embarrass you by asking any male Zell questions. After this, I shall bore from within.
Now, where have I heard that phrase before? Do I understand that you are becoming a thinker, Willard?
Certainly. That's the only way to smash them. Out-trick all their trickeries. Organize a fifth column. Then strike.
The end justifying the means, of course.
Of course.
I wonder if becoming a thinker doesn't simply mean that you've decided to use lies and tricks as your chief method. Well, you're working with Helmuth?
Not Helmuth. Tregaron. I'm afraid that Helmut's career as a thinker is going to have quite a setback.
Ah, well. Goodbye, Willard.
Tregaron, I want to talk to you.
Shall I leave?
No, please stay.
Jan?
Stay. You ought to enjoy this. George has that errorless memory chain.
Tregaron, you know why I'm here.
I don't know. I've been sadly remiss on my precognition and clairvoyance exercise. I've been too busy with other things, other people, other exercises. But I don't need Major to guess.
You just went ahead and canceled the conference without consulting me.
You called it without consulting me. Shouldn't do that sort of a thing, George.
I was absolutely sure of my ground, perfectly prepared. I visualized it. The rocket boosting up on chemical power, then setting sail.
Sail? Sail? A nuclear reactor rocket. George, you're fabulous.
Yes, sail. Thin streams of nuclear reflecting material and the rocket feeding Mason streams behind it. I conceived it all, complete, except for technical details.
George, you are a thinker. A real thinker.
I know.
Now look here, George. Every man should stick to his trade. Technology isn't ours.
You know as well as I do that we're going to have a nuclear spaceship and actually go to Mars someday.
Are we?
Yes. Just as we're going to have to build an actual Maisie. I helped you organize the thinkers. At least I was your first partner. Our basic idea was that the time had come to apply science to the life of man on a large scale. The only thing holding the world back from this was the ignorance and superstition of the average man and the stubbiness and lack of enterprise of the academic scientists. Their worship of facts, even when the facts were clearly dangerous.
Splendid. Splendid. Caddy, get me another beer.
I'm filing my nails. All right.
Everybody wanted the new world. The trips to Mars, the knowledge of the human brain. All they lacked was the nerve to take the first big step. And that was what we supplied.
Here's your beer.
There was no time for slow and careful plodding. We couldn't afford to check and double-check. We couldn't wait for the grudging approval of the professionals. We had to use fake stunts, tricks, anything to get over the big point. Once that was done, mankind was headed down the new road. It was easy to just heal the breach with the professionals. and to make good in actuality what had been made good in pretense.
Very good. The beer.
We built Maisie. We built the Mars rocket. We discovered the wisdom of the Martians. We sold the people and the science the professionals had been too high-toned to advertise or bring into the marketplace. But now that we'd succeeded, it's time to let accomplishment catch up with imagination, to implement fantasy with fact. You suppose I would have gone in with you if I hadn't known that someday we'd actually make what we claimed we had already made?
Oh, is that it?
Jan, the day's come, and I'm the man. I've prepared myself.
Caddy, clear the decks.
All right. I know. You just want room to point that fat finger.
I want her to stay.
All right. George, look, every revolutionary wants to see the big change take place in his lifetime. But time for the second step. George, the average man's exactly where he was 10 years ago when we took over. Except he's got a new god. More than ever, he thinks of Mars as a Hollywood paradise with wise men and yummy princesses, like Caddy here.
Do you think I'm yummy, really?
Shut up. Maisie is mama, magnified a million times. The professional scientists, they're more jealous and stuffy than ever. All they like to do is turn the clock back to a genteel dream world of square caps and quadrangles.
Bravo!
I said shut up. George, maybe in 10,000 years we'll be ready for the second big step. Meanwhile, the clever will rule the stupid. The realists will rule the dreamers. George, did you actually think you could have bossed those professionals? Nuclear scientists? Rocket physicists? Oh, now listen to me, boy. They'd have torn you to pieces in 20 minutes, and glad of the chance. George, you baffle me. You know that Maisie and the Mars trips and all that are fakes, yet you believe in your somno learning and consciousness expansion and optimism pumping like a corn-fed yokel.
There is a place for the man who has the courage to dream.
Sure. In a straitjacket. Oh, George, you remind me of those men who used to put out those lurid little magazines with Caddy's grandmother on the cover in outer space in a stripped-down bathing suit.
My grandmother never...
I said shut up! That's what it is. Frustrated little men playing science god to generations of pimply high school chemistry students and gas station attendants, conning them into thinking they're in the know, sprinkling a few formulas to the garbage and playing Atom Smasher, and then being very solemn about the role of imagination in science. George, the trouble with you is they forgot to take your zap gun and space cadet decoder pin away from you when you turn 13.
That's your honest opinion?
It's more than that. George, get a hold of yourself and quit taking fantasy in the veins. That's an order.
Jan, the strange part of it is that I know as well as you do that Maisie and the Mars trips are fakes, but some things aren't. The human mind, Jan, is a tool that hasn't been perfected yet. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in your philosophy, Horatio.
Who's Horatio?
I said shut up! This is the last full cackle, George. You've been fooling around with ESP, huh? Telepathy? Maybe a little hypnotism?
Maybe.
All right. Guess what I've got in my drawer. Extend your consciousness. Telepath it. Visualize it. Never mind. I'll save you the mental effort. It's a pistol, see? Now, let me tell you something. I got a couple of boys waiting outside. They'll take you by jet to New Mexico. George, congratulations. You're leaving for Mars tomorrow.
Mars?
Yes. I've decided Mars to be the best place for you. We'll arrange it so that your trip is, say, 2 years long. Perhaps in that time, orbiting up there, you'll learn a little Martian wisdom. For example, the big liar must never fall for his own lie. Meanwhile, I got a replacement for you. His name is Willard Farquhar.
But I sent for him to...
Yes. You see, I too believe in cooperation with the scientists. But by subversion. I'll offer them the hand of friendship, with a big fat bribe in it. You know what the bribe is? The power to destroy me. That's what I'm offering. Join us. Learn our secrets. Bore from within. Bide your time before you strike. But while he's biding, I'll have him. And when he's ready to strike, he'll find it's not quite the time. Wait a little bit. Enjoy the power. Play with fat old Jan Tregaron like a cat. And by then, I'll have him.
You can't replace me, Jan.
Oh, you were a good man, George. When we needed catchy slogans, ray guns, plastic helmets, a fancy sweater.
I warned you, Jan.
Don't underestimate the mind. The human brain. Even Caddy here is a fascinating instrument. For example, I had a little talk with Caddy last week.
Very boring.
Ah, but useful. But when we were finished, her mind had something it didn't have before.
You always were educational, George.
Caddy, look at me.
Hmm?
Look at me. Look at me. Now, put your hand on his arm.
Mm.
Now, take his gun. Caddy,
are you crazy?
I've got his gun. What now?
You see, Jan, there is a place for the dreamer, the man who believes, who can use his mind. I'm going to get rid of you, Jan, because the man who dares to dream will rule. Caddy, look at me. Look at me. Point the gun at him. Look at me.
I can't anymore. It's too ridiculous. Jan, take your silly gun back. It's too heavy.
What? Caddy, I command you, look at me. Look at me.
The power of the mind. Hey, boys. Come in and get him.
I don't understand. Caddy, look at me.
Oh, all right, I'll look at you. Poor Superman.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features You Go by E.C. Tubb, which proves that for pure chilling horror, nothing can beat cold, hard facts. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Appointment in Tomorrow, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Fritz Leiber and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Ted Osborne, Dean Almquist, Pat Hosley, Bob Hastings, Arthur Hughes, and Charles Penman. Your narrator was Floyd Mack. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.